feeling my tension. She's here. I can begin. I lift the strap of my bag over my shoulder and follow, slipping into the security line directly in front of her, knowing that people on the run only look behind them, never ahead. I listen and wait for my opening. She doesn't know it yet, but soon, she will become one of the vanished, and I will fade like a wisp of smoke into the sky and disappear.
Claire, Monday, February 21st, the day before the crash. Danielle, I say, entering the small office that sits adjacent to our living room. Please let Mr. Cook know I'm going to the gym. She looks up from her computer and I see her gaze snag on the bruise along the base of my throat, concealed with a thin layer of makeup. I automatically adjust my scarf to cover it, knowing she won't mention it. She never does. We have a meeting at the Center Street Literacy at 4, she says. You'll be late again. Danielle keeps track of my calendar and my missteps, and I've pegged her as the one most likely to report when I'm late to meetings or when I cancel appointments that my husband, Rory, deems important.
If I'm going to run for Senate, we don't have the luxury of making mistakes, Claire.
Thank you, Danielle. I can read the calendar as well as you can. Please have my notes from the last meeting uploaded and ready to go. I'll meet you there. As I leave the room, I hear her pick up the phone and my step falters, knowing this might draw attention at a time when I can't afford it. People always ask what it's like being married into the Cook family, a political dynasty second only to the Kennedys. I deflect with information about our foundation, trained to keep my focus on the work instead of the rumors. On our Third World Literacy and Water Initiatives, the inner city mentoring programs, the cancer research. What I can't tell them is that it's a constant battle to find any privacy. Even inside our home, people are there at all hours. Assistants, household staff who cook and clean for us. I have to fight for every spare minute and every square inch to call my own. There is nowhere that's safe from the eyes of Rory's staff. All of them devoted Cook employees. Even after 10 years of marriage, I'm still the interloper, the outsider who needs to be watched. I've learned how to make sure there's nothing to see. The gym is one of the few places Danielle doesn't follow, trailing after me with her lists and schedules. It's where I met Petra, the only friend I have left from my life before Rory, and the only one Rory hasn't forced me to abandon. Because as far as Rory knows, Petra doesn't exist. When I arrive at the gym, Petra is already there. I change in the locker room, and when I climb the stairs to the rows of treadmills, she's on the landing, taking a clean towel from the stack. Our eyes meet for a moment. And then she looks away as I help myself to a towel. Are you nervous? She whispers. Terrified, I say, turning and walking away. I run for an hour, my eyes on the clock, and when I step into the steam room at exactly 2:30 with a towel wrapped around my body, my muscles ache with exhaustion. The air is thick with steam, and I smile at Petra, who sits alone on the top row, her face red with heat. Do you remember Mrs. Morris? She asks when I sit down next to her. I smile, grateful to think of something from a simpler time. Mrs. Morris was our government teacher in the 12th grade, and Petra almost failed the class. You studied with me every afternoon for a month, she continues, when none of the other kids would come near me or Nico because of who our father was. You stepped up and made sure I graduated. I turned on the wooden bench to face her. You make it sound like you and Nico were pariahs. You had friends. Petra shakes her head. People being nice to you because your father is the Russian version of Al Capone doesn't make them friends. We'd attended an elite school in Pennsylvania where the children and grandchildren of old money viewed Petra and her brother Nico as a novelty, sliding up to them as if on a dare to see how close they could get, but never letting either of them all the way in. And so we'd formed a trio of outcasts. Petra and Nico made sure no one made fun of my second-hand uniform or the beat-up Honda my mother used to pick me up in, rattling its way to the curb, belching exhaust in its wake. They made sure I didn't eat alone and dragged me to school events.